translation. Because Krishna has four extraordinary qualities not possessed by Lord Narayan, the goddess of fortune Lakshmi always desires his company. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Narayan has 60 transcendental qualities. Over and above these, Krishna has four extraordinary transcendental qualities absent in Lord Narayan. These four qualities are, one, wonderful pastimes that are compared to an ocean. Two, association in the circle of supreme devotees in conjugal love, the gopis. Three, Lord Krishna is playing on the flute whose vibration attracts the free world. And four, Lord Krishna's extraordinary beauty, which surpasses the beauty of the three worlds. Lord Krishna's beauty is unequaled and unsurpassed. Om agyanati mirandasya agyanandana sarakaya chakshurun militam gena tasmai sri gurave namaha. Today is also the appearance day of Lalita Sakhi, Lalita Shasti. So we'll speak a little bit about that at the end. We're continuing here with the conversation between Lord Chaitanya and Venkata Bhat in Sri Rangam, where they worship Narayan as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, due to my small little living-in-a-box life, I thought that maybe, after all these years of Krishna consciousness being propagated and explained to people around the world, that the dictionary definition of Krishna might have changed. So I looked it up yesterday, but my goodness, it still hasn't changed. It describes Krishna as an avatar of Narayan. And this is why Lord Chaitanya is having the conversation with Venkata Bhat. Because Venkata Bhat and all the devotees in Sri Rangam worship Narayan as the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. My goodness, he has four arms. So he must be supreme to that one who's like us with two arms. But Lord Chaitanya is, in this particular conversation that we've been studying for quite some time now, is gradually bringing Venkata Bhat to a higher understanding. And these four qualities that Krishna possesses are more or less an essential ingredient in understanding why Krishna, the cowherd boy with two hands who plays a flute, the son of Mother Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj, is the actual Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original full Swayam Bhagavan, the original form of the Lord. In order to explain that and describe it in kind of like a dynamic way so that we can understand how it works, I picked three verses that if in your mind you can fix kind of like a triangle. Last week, Prabhupada Damodar Swami spoke on this verse, which we'll put at the top, because this is kind of the culmination of where Lord Chaitanya has been heading. When the sages of Namasharanya met with Sutta Goswami, they asked him several questions, which is chapter 1 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In chapter 2, he describes about bhakti, and in chapter 3, it's called scheduled incarnations. And there's a whole list, because the sages had asked him, please explain about the Lord's transcendental pastimes that he performs in the material world. They asked two different questions. One was, please explain his transcendental leelas when he comes like Vamana and Nisringadeva and those. And please explain his incarnations of how he creates the material world, like the guna avatars, Mahavishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, Chirodakshaya Vishnu. When he was finished describing all the different, or several of the different multi-incarnations, Sutta Goswami chanted this verse. Ete cham sakala pumsam krishnastu bhagavan svayam indrari vyakulam lokam mirdayanti yuge yuge. All these incarnations of Godhead are either plenary portions or parts of plenary portions of the Purusha avatars. But Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. In every age, he protects the world through his different features when the world is disturbed by the enemies of Indra. So, as was explained last week, this Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam line is like a Mahavakya. It's like a cornerstone, like a pillar, holding up the philosophy of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And Jiva Goswami in the Sat Sandarbhas has vastly explained the grammar behind this Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam. Bhagavan Swayam means the original, Swayam, personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. So Krishna with two hands who plays a flute. Why? So that's our top verse. Ete cham sakalak pum sam Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam is up here on our triangle. Lower right will be ye yatam mam papadyante tam stataiva bhajamyaham mamar vanu vartante manusya partha savrisham. As all of them surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Krita. And then on the other side, on the right-hand side, to make our triangle, Rupa Goswami has composed a verse which is practically the definition of pure devotional service. Anyabhilasita sunyam, jnana karmati anavratam, anukulyena krishnanu, silanam bhakti uttama. Now we're all familiar with these verses. So put them in your mind with ete cham sakala pum sam on the upper part of the triangle. Lower left, ye yatam mam prapadyante tam stataiva bhajamyaham. And lower right, anyabhilasita sunyam jnana karmati anavratam. And we'll explain each one of them. And as we do, you'll start to see how this triangle, each one relates to the other, just like in a triangle, and they're all connected. So, ete cham sakala pum sam Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. And the example given in the Brahma Samhita, it's just like taking a candle and lighting other candles with it. When you take a candle and light another candle, the same power is in the new candle. But that new candle simultaneously is an individual candle. But it's the same. In the material world, we're extremely limited and conditioned by concepts of time and space. So when we use this example, it's a material example. There's no action in any time when Krishna isn't, or Balaram and the different expansions of Krishna in the spiritual world don't exist. It's not that there was only Krishna and then he, like the candle example, lit unlit candles. They all exist eternally. But what happens is that there are qualities that are slightly transformed when that candle infuses the new candle with its power. Not all of it goes into the new candle, although it's still Vishnu Tattva. These are called amsas of the Supreme Personality. Amsa is a very intimate part, an amsa. Whereas, for example, the first one is Balaram. Now, these qualities that we just read, practically speaking, if you look at the qualities, Balaram possesses them all. He plays the flute. He has intimate pastimes with gopis. He has loving devotees, and he has a form which is extremely beautiful. So Balaram and Krishna are practically the same person, but they're different colors. And they're different individuals, as we know. Balaram was friends with Duryodhana. Well, who can ever understand how that is? Because Duryodhana was so antagonistic toward the devotees of Krishna. But he's an older brother, and his rasa works that way. For the pleasure of both of them, and for the Supreme Swayam Bhagavan, Krishna. So Balaram is the first, they call, expansion. From Balaram, that's when things start to expand even differently, more differently. He expands into the four, Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha, the Chaturvyuha. Then Sankarshan from that group expands again into another second Chaturvyuha. And from there, Mahavishnu, and all the different expansions of forms that preside over planets in Vaikuntha. Then Maha Sankarshan, or Karna Dakshai Vishnu, from his body, all the different universes expand. And the Vibhinamsa, not the Umsas, but the Vibhinamsas, the small spark-like living entities who are going to be conditioned in the material world, expand from him into the material world, where there are the different Purusha avatars. In each universe, there's a Garbhodakshaya Vishnu who lies in the bottom of the universe. From his navel comes the lotus flower where Brahma is living, and in the stem of that lotus flower, all the living entities and planets reside. Within that, there's another planet, Shiradakshaya Vishnu. And from him, all the different avatars will expand, and he expands himself into every atom and in the hearts of all living entities. So what we have is Ete Chamsa Kalapam Sam Krishnas Tu Bhagavan Swayam. During the maintenance of those universes, in order to attract all the living entities who have expanded and are present in the material world, the Lord performs leelas. The first three, Matsya, Korma, Varaha, and Nishringa. There's no parents, there's no friends, there's practically no real service provided in those relationships. But as the incarnations progress to Vamana, Parasaram, Ram, then we get more of a development of relationship in their leelas. The same is there in Vaikuntha. In Vaikuntha, there's basically only 2.5 rasas. There's existence in Shanta Rasya, and there's Dasya Rasa. All the living entities in Vaikuntha, below Ayodhya. This was described in Sanatana Goswami's Brihad Bhagavatamrita in a narrative way. All of them, all that expansive energy, is basically service to Narayan with awe and reverence. All the living entities who exist in that huge, unlimited space worship the Lord in that way. In Ayodhya, we have a little bit different rasa, which manifests in Kaushalya, Dasarath, Sumitra, Kaikeyi. There's some parental love. There's some conjugal love with Ram and Sita. Hanuman, now you think about Hanuman. Does Hanuman have friendship with Lord Ram? Not really. It's not that he can be friendly. He's a servant, but he's like the epitome. He's like the topmost of that service attitude. Now, if we take a glass of milk, white glass of milk, and consider that Shanta Rasa, existence without any rasa, okay, without any real service and reciprocation. And we take it one drop of blue. We'll take a blue of awe, which is awe and reverence. So we take a drop and we put it into the milk. This awe and reverence creates a service attitude in the relationship between the supreme and the created. So they worship that supreme because he provides, and obviously he's greater than they are. As that blue increases, as we add more drops into our glasses of milk, the sense of an attitude of awe and reverence and desire to serve increases and comes up to the level of like Hanuman, where Hanuman opened his heart, and who did you see? Everybody's seeing the painting. Sipan Ram in Hanuman's heart, that's who he lives for. He exists to serve Ram, Sita, and Ram. So this is the, and everything is coming from Krishna. Now we're starting to go from these existence. I want to first go back a little bit and explain how those candles exist everywhere. In everywhere in the spiritual world and everywhere in the material world, there are expansions. What's this one? Vipacha revihi disantaram abhyupetya vipayate virvitu hetu samana dharma yastadragiva hitra vishnu tayavibhati govindam adi purusham tamaham vajami. The light of one candle being communicated to other candles, although it burns separately in them, is the same in its quality. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who exhibits himself equally in the same mobile manner in his various manifestations. And then this one explains how he's present everywhere. Ekopyaso rachaitum jagadanda kotim yachchakthirasti jagadanda chayayaranta andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam govindamadi purusham tamam vajami. He is an undifferentiated entity, and there is no distinction between the potency and the possessor thereof. In his work of creation of millions of worlds, his potency remains inseparable. This means that he's non-different, the Achinta Beta Beta concept. Although he's a person playing in Goloka Vrindavan, everything that exists is simultaneously non-different than him. A nice example. We're conscious of all our body. You touch any part of your body and you're conscious that there's something going on there. We're not conscious of perhaps some of the internal organs and how it's functioning. That's being taken place by another entity. But we can at least understand consciousness, and we can even expand our consciousness. Like, we know pretty much what's going on here with our central perception. We're conscious of what's happening in this room and a little bit outside the parking lot and around the temple area. And that's about the extent of our conscious awareness. But we are aware, and a car just went by. You didn't see it, but I saw it. A car went by. You're aware. Each one of us is aware from our own perspective of something. And an awareness concept, we're aware of the things around us and ourselves. If we take that concept as a small little spark and expand it unlimitedly, you can understand how Krishna is, he's everywhere, and he's conscious of everything. He's the big fire, and we're a little tiny spark. We're limited, he's unlimited. So it describes here that all the universe exists in him, and he is present in his fullness in every one of the atoms that are scattered throughout the universe at one and the same time, such as the primeval Lord whom I adore. So we establish that this entity is everywhere and everything, ete cham sakalapam sam Krishna's true Bhagavan slam. Then we go over to our verse, yayatam mam prapadyante tam sataiva bhajamyaham. And no matter where you are, no matter what living entity it is, no matter what kind of consciousness they have, Krishna has a relationship with them. And he can reciprocate with them in any way that they reciprocate back with him. As they worship me, I reward them accordingly. In other words, it's a reciprocal exchange. Each expansion, whether it be his own amsas or vibhinamsas, has an inherent sanatan dharma. It has an inherent natural quality. Lord Nisringadev is Krishna, but he has a natural quality, a personality, a nature. And he has nama, rupa, guna, and lila. Each one of the Lord's incarnations has their own nama, rupa, guna, lila, devotees, dham, and they have all these different things, that characteristics that make up a personality. Similarly, the vibhinamsas, each jiva, has an inherent natural love for the Lord. But for some unexplained reason, truly, unknown reason, some living entities have that individual, what's it called? Independence, and it's misused. It's misdirected. instead of desiring to serve the Lord or reciprocate with the Lord, which is their natural inherent nature, they desire, because they're part and parcel of that original supreme individual, they desire to be the supreme individual and want to be the enjoyer rather than the servant. And those living entities are sent to the material world, which exists in order to have them go through sojourns so that they'll again awaken their natural inherent quality, just like a seed when you put it in the ground and photosynthesis starts to take place with light and water and the ingredients from the earth. What happens is that natural quality in the seed starts to germinate and sprout. And as the process of watering and life and nutrients continues, the natural inherent qualities within the seed begin to manifest. So what happens is that when a jiva comes to the human form of life, comes in contact with a guru, learns how to hear and chant and associate with devotees, that is considered the watering process that helps it grow, and its natural inherent quality starts to relate with the Supreme. So, Ete Chamsa Kalapum Sam Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam. He's everywhere. He's in all zillions and unlimited forms. Yayatam Mam Prapadyante Tamstataiva Bhajamyaham. He can relate and exchange in any way with the living entities or with his servants in the different rasas. So let's examine a little more about how those rasas start to manifest in higher. They always say higher realms or higher. There's no real high and low in existence of the absolute. What it is more features. Can we say, really, that there's a higher love than Hanuman's service to Sita and Ram? How can we accommodate such a concept? There's no higher love, but that there's an element in rasa, because Hanuman's perfect. He's eternally, he's a nitya siddha. That living entity who's been created by the Lord is perfect. There's no higher way for him to go. It's only more and more expansive in his relationship. A rose, or let's say a rose will never become a jasmine flower or a magnolia flower. It's a rose. It may start to bud a little bit and smell, but as it grows, it simply expands its nature as a rose. It smells more. It blooms more. It becomes more and more beautiful as it blooms. So each person is perfect in their original creation by the Lord, or in their eternal existence and their Sanatana Dharma. But there are features of reciprocation, yayatam mam prapadyante, which expand with those different living entities, as described by Lord Chaitanya to Sanatana Goswami. Bhakta bede rati bede panchara prakar shanti rata shanta rati dasya rati sakya rati ar vatsalya rati madhurya rati e pancha vigveda rati bede krishna bhakti rasa pancha bede. According to the devotee, attachment falls within the five categories of shantarati, dasyarati, sakyarati, vatsalyarati, and madhuryarati. These five categories arise from the devotee's different attachments to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The transcendental mellows derived from devotional service are also of five varieties. Now, in those categories, there's an interesting feature which is starts to drill into the concept of why Lakshmi can't enter the rasa dance, which is the essence of our conversation. Puna Krishna Ratihaya Dyuti Prakar Aisvarya Gyanamisra Kevala Beda Ar. Attachment for Krishna is divided into two categories. One is attachment with awe and reverence, and the other is pure attachment without reverence. And then there's a whole analysis of the different types of devotees. Now, what we did was we had a glass of milk and we had the blue for awe and reverence. Now let's take what's called mamata. For those who are regular listeners to our classes, Sesha Prabhu gave a great class on this many months ago. Mamata means intimacy. And let's take a pink or a red eyedropper, a red color, and we drop it into our milk. It's intimacy with the Supreme Lord. And the more the red increases, the more the milk, the white, transforms and becomes pink, and then it becomes darker and orange and red, like that. So similarly, the ingredients change, just like on a computer monitor. They have this thing where you can choose millions of colors. Because for all practical purposes, the very slightest transformation, just a drop in a huge vat of milk, a drop of red, does change it. It may be ever so slightly, but it changes the color of that glass of milk or that exchange. So as we rise or as we progress in rasa, the awe and reverence is there, but there's also friendliness. And the perfect example is Arjuna. Arjuna, imagine the bond that is established between people, especially men, but now even in the military and women, when you risk your life in a war side by side with somebody. That's intense. That's so intense, the bond that's established in such an endeavor and such an exchange becomes extremely, you're depending. Your life depends on the actions of another. Your very existence, your life in this body, depends on working with that person. And that's why people are teams, but especially military. Kshatriyas have such a bond. So in Dwarka, Krishna has a whole army of people and their wives and their children, and they're all so tight and loving. They're the Yadu dynasty. Great how they live together. And they're sometimes friendly, because that's the nature of their lives. So Arjuna had this, and he's sitting and he's hanging with Krishna, and he knows the kids, and you know they're all friendly. But in the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna showed his universal form to Arjuna, what happened? That friendship dissipated immediately. It was like, whoa, please forgive me. Forgive me for lying on the same bed with you, for calling you my friend. You're the greatest. Because he actually saw who he was dealing with in his feature of that supreme personality of Godhead. So in friendship, there's two different types. Sambrahma Sakya means with awe and reverence. And Vishramba Sakya means without awe and reverence. When Subal or Sudan or any of those friends in Vrindavan who are playing with Krishna with different games, it's described that when in the Palamba Sura pastime, remember that what happened was that when they were playing a game and the winning team would get on the shoulders of the losers. That was, they had to carry them around. That was the price of the loss. You had to pick somebody up and carry them around on your shoulders. Palambasura was on Krishna's team, and he had to get on Balaram's shoulder, and then Balaram ran him around. So they actually get on top of Krishna. His friends get on top of him and put their feet on his body. They steal his lunch. They play games like this. It's totally free from any awe and reverence. So another one was Mother Yasoda. She's a really wonderful example of how when Krishna ate dirt and came home, she scolded him. What are you doing? And he said, I didn't eat dirt. Well, let me look in your mouth. And when he opened his mouth, What happened? It was like Arjuna. Same universal vision, universal form was shown to Mother Yasoda. But Mother Yasoda's natural vatsalya bhava, her love for Krishna as a mother, overpowered the red, overpowered the blue. The sentiment in her nature. Arjuna's perfect. Arjuna's absolutely a nitya siddha, travels with Krishna, was with him millions of years ago. He's perfect. But Mother Yasoda's love is different. So we say higher. It's not really higher. It's different. So this shows the difference between how the Lord can reciprocate with anyone according to their natural behavior. Now, anyabhilasita sunyam jnana kamani anavarnam anukulyena krishna nu silanam bhakti uttama. In the commentary on this verse in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, they describe that the root of the verb, the root of a verb in any sentence establishes what's happening, the action taking place in that description. So silanam means that activity which is anukulyena krishnanu, favorable to Krishna. So when pure devotional service is what anyabhilasita sunyam jnana karmani anavritam, jnana and karma, that jnana, that aishvarya jnana, that knowledge of the Supreme as the Supreme with awe and reverence is absent. Now, like Vasudeva and Devaki are another examples. When Vishnu appeared as a little baby before them, they had a wonderful mix of rasa in their hearts. They had love for Krishna, for Vishnu, Vasudeva, as their son, because it was a little baby. But he had hair, and he had a crown, and he had four arms, and he had all his paraphernalia of Vishnu, and he knew he was Vishnu. So that description is beautiful, how they had this wonderful mix of love for him. Similarly, after Krishna and Balaram killed Kamsa, Vasudeva and Devaki were still back in the prison, and Balaram and Krishna came before them, 12-year-old boys, and paid their obeisances to their parents. Imagine after all that time, they felt separation from their children. But simultaneously, they remembered who he is. So their reciprocation was mixed. Whereas Nanda and Yasoda, it's described that when Krishna became just a few months old and was able to kind of walk around, Nanda Maharaj very lovingly would say, Ganaya, get my shoes. He would have Krishna get his shoes. Who? How you can do that for the Supreme Person? So when Krishna sent Uddhava from Mathura to Vrindavan, that whole lila explains this concept in full. How that freedom from awe and reverence is manifest only in Vrindavan. Another way to look at this element of the rasa dance concept is we know that Lakshmi, just as Krishna expands himself into all the different Purusha avatars and avatars and expansions we just described, similarly, Radharani, Srimati Radharani, is the source of all the different female consorts of the Lord. There's three different kinds. There's the Lakshmis, and goddesses of fortune in Vaikuntha, there's the queens in Dwarka, and there's the gopis in Vrindavan. And Srimati Radharani is the original source, or the full exhibition, manifestation of that Padini Shakti. And just like the expansions of Krishna, as they expand, don't exhibit that fullness, similarly, the expansions of Srimati Radharani exhibit different personalities, not the full one that she has. So by the time we're to the Vaikuntha exhibition of Vishnu Tattva, we have a different kind of nature of a person with the forearms receiving worship of awe and reverence from both Lakshmi and all his servants. And there's that famous pastime in Govardhan where Krishna wanted to hide from the gopis and he manifested the forearmed form. So when they came before him, they said, "Oh, Lord Narayan," they paid obeisance, "where is Krishna?" So if Vamanadev, Nrisimhadev, or Sridhar, or Vasudev, one of the Narayan expansions, went down to the banks of the Jamuna and started calling the gopis, he doesn't play the flute, so he'd have to do it another way, and they came to him, they wouldn't have that feeling of exchange with that form of the Lord, right? It would be different because it's a different manifestation of him. Similarly, when Lakshmi tries to come to the rasa dance, the same thing happens. It's incompatible reciprocation. It doesn't work. And no, you can't come here, no matter how many austerities you do. So Lord Chaitanya is explaining that these four qualities in that original Swayam Bhagavan make him most attractive out of all the different forms. The Leela Madhuri, he performs wonderful varieties of pastimes, especially his childhood pastimes. Bhakti Madhuri, he's surrounded by devotees endowed with wonderful love of God. That love without awe and reverence. Venu Madhuri, he can attract all living entities all over the universe by playing his flute. We don't hear of any exhibition of Krishna once he left Vrindavan for Mathura playing his flute. He never played like in the gardens of Dwarka. He never pulls out his flute. It's not his nature. He's a kshatriya. Flute playing, he doesn't exchange love with other people's wives. He doesn't like take like Yaki's wife to the side. It's a different rasa. It's swakya rather than parakya. And Rupa Madhuri, he has wonderful excellences of beauty, which cannot be rivaled anywhere. The form of Krishna, the little boy playing the especially Kishore form, is unparalleled in beauty. And because it's Lalita Sakhi's appearance day, let's read about some of her exchanges in nature in her relationship with this cowherd boy. Lalita Devi was born in the village of Karhala, and later her father brought her to Uttagaon, which is close to Varsana, where Srimati Radharani lived. There are still many remains of Lalita having lived there, like a rock containing the imprints of her lotus feet. There are also imprints of some of the small utensils she used when she and the other Sakis fed Lord Krishna, when he would come to visit with them. When the sunrise falls on these imprints of those pots and plates, they glitter and shine. All the Sakis used to play with Krishna and Lalita in Uttagaon, and there are many places where you can see their footprints even to this day. On the hill, there's a slippery rock showing where this specific pastime was enacted in a marriage arena. There, the gopis arranged a special kind of marriage between Lalita and Krishna. This should not be misunderstood as a real marriage, but rather a play marriage, like the marriage that was once enacted between Srimati Radharani and Krishna. In that pastime, Krishna was sitting beside Lalita, and the Sakis began to play mischievously. Vishakha and some of the other Sakis tied Lalita's veil to Krishna's pitambara, his yellow shawl. Then suddenly, on the indication of Srimati Radharani, Rangadevi and the other Sakis started to sing wedding songs, while Tungavidya and the others uttered wedding mantras. The remaining Sakis showered flowers on Krishna and Lalita. When Lalita noticed that something tricky was being done, she tried to run away. But because she was tied to Krishna's pitambara, she could not run away. All the Sakis then surrounded the couple and married them. Even today, one can see the signs on the side of the hill, as well as the markings of alta, red lac, from the gopis' lotus feet. Although these pastimes took place 5,000 years ago, you can still visualize these signs with your own eyes. There are four types of Sakis. Swapaksha, Vipaksha, Tatastha, and Suhrit. Swapaksha means those sakis who are totally on the side of Srimati Radharani. Vipaksha means those gopis who are totally opposite, supporting Chandravali and opposed to Radha. Tatastha means those who are neutral towards Srimati Radharani and more favorably inclined towards Chandravali. And Suhrit means those who are more favorably disposed towards Srimati Radharani and neutral towards Chandravali. Lalita Devi and Vishakha Devi are examples of gopis who are swapaksha to Srimati Radharani. Chandravali is vipaksha, Bhadra is tatastha, and Shamala is Suhrit. Lalita Devi is the prime astasaki of the eight primary sakis of Srimati Radharani. She generally has the same loving attitude towards both Radha and Krishna, yet she is more protective of and loyal to Srimati Radharani. Lalita Sakhi is always favorably disposed towards the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, and she always tries to please them. When Radha and Krishna meet and engage in amorous pastimes, Lalita generally wipes away the perspiration from their lotus feet. Sometimes she authoritatively commands both Radha and Krishna, wagging her index finger at them. But she is able to do this only because she is so fiercely loving toward them. Also, this sort of affectionate bullying heightens the divine couple's enjoyment in union. Lalita has many charming qualities. For the sadhakas, she is their best hope. If she sees any gopi in Vrindavan or anyone who has even the slightest desire to serve Srimati Radharani, she immediately fulfills that person's wish and gives her unlimited wealth of service to Srimati Radharani's lotus feet. If anyone has one pointed desire to perform service to Srimati Radharani under the direct guidance of Srimati Lalita, and furthermore under the shelter of Sri Rupa Manjari, that devotee should know that Lalita Devi's shelter is the only path by which one can achieve this. So Lalita Sakhi Ki Jai. Any questions or comments? Yes, don't ask me, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Nice class, Prabhu. I have a question about the, I think you were saying, you know, the jnana in the
economy and abhidhamma,
pure devotional, the definition of pure devotional service refers to knowledge imbued with aishvarya. But Maya, is that correct?
Not really. It can, there's different types of ways that that's expressed, as you know. That jnana of Krishna's opulence, we see that Rupa Goswami, all the acharyas, are writing about how Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. So we can't say that they're not knowledgeable about his position and that they don't have that jnana. That doesn't make sense.
Well, my understanding is that jnana refers to speculative knowledge.
Speculative knowledge and impersonal.
Yeah, that leads, you know, that kind of speculative tendency that leads to an impersonal realization, as opposed to divyajnana, you know, the kind of knowledge that, well, Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, but, you know, he has this capacity to reciprocate, you know, in very powerful ways with his devotees. Anyway, I just wanted some clarification.
Thank you. That's good to clarify.
Then one other point is, you know, you were describing in the beginning, you know, how there's sometimes descriptions of higher rasas, higher realms.
Yeah.
But what I understand, I think this is coming from Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatana Goswami. And I know I was covering that, you know, in the hierarchy of spiritual places in instruction, and I was teaching that. But as the intimacy goes up, you know, as the mouth becomes pinker and pinker and redder, you know, the love between that's exchanged, the attachment becomes greater and greater and greater, and also the pleasure that Krishna experiences and the pleasure that the devotee experiences becomes higher, you know, greater and greater and greater.
Yeah.
So, that was my understanding of why they were, you know, this kind of like this hierarchy.
Nice explanation. Because of our conditioning and material life, higher again, we can't say that Hanuman is lower. That's what I was trying to infer. That love, in love, there's fuller and like you say, more features, and when we call higher, just because of the winner and the loser. And first place, second place, third place, we've been conditioned by that since childhood. But it's not, so I was trying to say we shouldn't think of it like that. That, you know, Hanuman's not on the all-star team because he's not a sattva or something. Pardon? Advaya Gyan. Oh, back to Pundarik's class a few weeks ago. Thank you. Yes, it is Advaya Gyan. It's an absolute realm. There's really no higher or lower. There, Vedanti tatvat tatva vidas tatvam yad gyanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti sabjite. It's the same substance perceived differently. One of the things that I also wanted to mention was that when one falsely or prematurely tries to reciprocate with the Lord in an intimate way, then it causes rasabhasa and an unpalatable experience. For example, we, who are conditioned souls in the material world, if we try to chastise Krishna or lovingly chastise Krishna or something like that, we're not in a position where we can really react like that. Of course, we want to cultivate our love simultaneously. We don't want to not do that. But sahajaism is when that comes in. When somebody thinks they're on a level where they can chastise Radha and Krishna or something of that nature. This is Srila Prabhupada. I wanted to find a verse where Srila Prabhupada, or lecture, where Prabhupada was explaining Anyabhi Vasita Sunyam. It's almost like a... Yeah, please. So this is that.
Anukarma Anamritam Anukullena Krishna Anusulena Bhakti Yuktam. There are so many other definitions. And if bhakti and
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.